on high alert at Hutton tonight. There's a rumour going round that some EDF pilots have gone space crazy, which is like normal crazy but cooler because it has the word space in front of it. The thing is, we heard they're heading up to Hutton with holds of full of biowaste to dump all over the station. That would be nasty. Even for Hutton, where people deal with Cubicle 3 on a daily basis. Not to mention, all that extra mass might make the orbital sink, or something. Floor mapping guy has a team of volunteers ready to go with homemade hazmat suits and mops. The Hutton curling team are running drills with their brooms, and the Momus bog spaniels from security are biting random passers-by to get their eye in. Maintenance teams are spraying WD-40 into the mechanisms of the big blast shutters. They haven't been used in a while, as normally no one can be bothered coming all the way out to Hutton just to shoot at it. In Hutton Central Command, there are lots of red lights and the big board is tracking a signal on approach. Sirens begin to wail and anyone looking through the window can see a bright flash off in the distance. A tatty old T9 nears the station and the words Hutton News outside broadcast can be seen along the side. The comm beeps and the main screen is filled with a face like a Hutton Baker's Halloween cake. Bleary eyes focus on completely different sides of the screen. Screeching feedback erupts from the speakers and a voice says...
Mike's live!
Oh, my throat feels better now. Welcome to tonight's show. I'm Rudolf Hucker, and I'm bringing the old Type 9 outside broadcast unit in for a refit.
I'm Wilma Fingerdoo, and I say we raise the blast shutters, because I get to press the button.
It's me, isn't it?
Seamless.
I'm your host, and I ain't got a bit of a fright. Looks like there's some bio-waste to clean up after all.
I'm Norma Snockers, and I'll give the EDF a good panning if they come round here.
Did someone say the feds were coming to Hutton? I'm Mike Rochburns.
I'm Sandy Crevis, and I've bottled the smell of Cubicle 3 so I can sell it to the EDF as an air freshener.
Oh, right, that is fresh. Oh, pine fresh, lovely. Right, let's get to the headlines before Sandy smashes one of those bottles and, then we have to evacuate the studio. 10% of the galaxy to move away from private ownership, says PF.
ARC's stretcher confirms... Even it costs only the one.
A hardy adventure.
New, more formal bananas as SI units suggested.
Seoul's AAA stronghold status at risk.
I investigate why there aren't more motile cucumboids.
And I take a slice through the soggy bottom of Hutton's BGS crisping drawer.
The Pilots Federation has confirmed a plan to repurchase 10 million of its own shares, a move that would see the organisation reclaim around 10% of the galaxy's currently governed space from external shareholders. The share buyback was approved at a special general meeting and will take place via standard market transactions. The Pilots Federation stated that the programme is intended to return capital to stakeholders and strengthen institutional control. The move has generated considerable interest, given the unique role the Pilots Federation plays in overseeing the licensing, regulation, and taxation of virtually every ship and station across known human space. Although it does not manufacture new starships, colonization vessels, or station platforms, the organization has reported a significant uptick in revenues. Sources cite the widespread taxes levied on almost all transactions, undeclared rebates linked to new ship sales, and highly profitable investments in paint shares. The buyback has, however, introduced an unusual complication. David Brubin, former chief executive and the single largest shareholder in the galaxy, is projected to cross a regulatory threshold as a result of the repurchase. Under galactic corporate law, written in part by the Pilots Federation itself, this would ordinarily require Brubin to offer to buy out all the remaining shareholders. In effect, this would obligate him to purchase ownership of the entire galaxy. At present, the galaxy contains an estimated 400 billion star systems, excluding regions currently occupied by Tharg the Mighty, and sectors that no one has yet been to. To avoid this scenario, the Pilots Federation has convened a further general meeting. Shareholders will be asked to approve a waiver exempting Brubin from the mandatory acquisition of the galaxy requirement. In a statement issued via legal representatives, Brubin commented,
"One galaxy is far too much for one man, though my wife's been known to devour a two-food bar of it on occasion, all on her own."
The buyback is regarded positively by many in the industry, but not the forums as usual. According to sources at Hutton Orbital, the move is being interpreted as a sign of stability. The Big Bang isn't happening again anytime soon. The Thargoids have been sent packing for now, and the Guardians appear to be languishing in the kind of dim and distant past usually reserved for a T-Rex. Or perhaps even primordial soup. Separately, the Pilots Federation also confirmed progress on its rewilding initiative. The latest planetary site, the third of its kind, has been successfully terraformed. Reports indicate that large Brontosaurus herds are thriving on the world. Local agriculture has adapted accordingly, with exceptionally tall fruiting trees now commonplace, following early difficulties when it was discovered that Brontosaurus are reluctant to bend down to eat tiny pineapples.
The Arc Stretcher retail chain has been sold for One Arcs. Its administrators have confirmed. The retailer operates more than 3,000 small outlets across the bubble, including one controversial vending stall at Hutton Orbital. It was placed into administration earlier this cycle following prolonged financial difficulties. Originally founded in 3295 on a business model where every item was priced at one arcs, Arc Stretcher became widely known for its selection of brightly coloured plastic goods, confectionery of uncertain origin, and budget personal care products. One customer directorate report described these items as
strongly evocative of melted crayons.
The firm had previously gained notoriety after its marketing team was linked to the Free Anaconda Hutton campaign. This promotional stunt resulted in thousands of commanders making the 0.22 light-year supercruise to the outpost, only to discover the offer was not redeemable in any practical sense. According to administrators, the decision to sell the company for one arcs was made after major investment groups showed little interest. Factors cited included galactic inflation and a decline in discretionary ARC spending on physical goods. Pilots have increasingly favoured ship paint jobs and hollow me accessories. The business was also affected by a significant reduction in staff after widespread cases of repetitive customer service answer syndrome. This syndrome was formally recognised by the Federal Medical Bureau last year. Staff were frequently required to state it is one arcs, hundreds of times per standard shift. Legal difficulties have also contributed to the company's troubles. A lawsuit filed by Wonders, the well-known supplier of personal entertainment products, alleged that the Arc Stretcher name was too similar to one of its popular product lines. The legal complaint argued that customers were being misled. Several documented incidents involved customers purchasing one Arc's hair-curling tongs under the mistaken impression that they were suitable for other forms of personal use. Medical staff across multiple systems reported an increase in cases requiring the delicate removal of such items from locations they were not designed to visit. The resulting publicity was described by one administrator as
unhelpful,
as was the cheeky marketing slogan, "We stretch your arcs even further," which has since been banned as a result of outbreaks of spontaneous tittering.
We also make those,
said a spokesperson for Wonders. The new owner, Commander Bargainbin, who logged a successful acquisition bid of One Arcs earlier this week, has not yet outlined future plans for the chain. A spokesperson stated that
all options are currently being reviewed,
and that
the traditional Arc Stretcher value proposition will be respected.
Challenges remain for the retailer. Authorities in several systems have introduced stricter food safety regulations following the discovery of unauthorized E-number compounds in Arc Stretcher branded snack items. Consumer advocacy groups are also pressing for cleaner labeling on cosmetic products after multiple incidents involving hollow shimmer blush and adverse skin reactions. The chain's flagship outlet at Hutton Orbital remains open with inventory unchanged. Local sources report that the shop's One Arc signs were recently replaced with new ones reading "Still One Arcs." The replacements reportedly cost 2 arcs each.
New long-distance travel report this week has highlighted the occasional pitfalls of modern ultra-fast ship technology. Commander Hardy, the fastest recorded pilot to complete the Hutton run, has returned from Colonia region to the bubble in just 90 minutes, though not entirely as planned. Commander Hardy had been conducting advanced engineering work in Colonia when the news arrived that a key community goal was approaching its deadline. Eager to secure completion and associated rewards, the commander launched a direct return journey. With a Mandalay-class ship configured for nearly 90.5 light-years per jump, the trip was described as almost trivial by Hardy.
Going out to Colonia these days takes about as long as the Hutton run used to,
they said.
Although, at least with the Hutton run, I can make brownies while it was happening.
To achieve the required jump range, Hardy had stripped the vessel of all non-critical equipment. Reports suggest that the ship was launched without its usual portable brownie oven, coffee machine, or standard issue sanitation facilities. When questioned, Hardy reportedly remarked,
I'll just have to cross my legs.
Instead, Hardy had planned to utilise Newton Star scoops en route to bake a batch of their signature chocolate brownies, relying on the intense heat generated during fuel boosts. Unfortunately, this process proved to be rather more destructive than anticipated. According to sources, hull integrity was sacrificed in the name of achieving a suitably firm exterior and gooey centre. The journey was further complicated by a minor omission during pre-flight preparations. While optimising the ship for record jump attempts, Hardy had removed the Auto Field Maintenance Unit, AFMU, a module with no mass or impact on performance when inactive.
A schoolboy error,
Hardy later admitted.
I didn't put it back on before leaving. I was about 3,500 light-years in when I realised my module list was looking a bit light. I did briefly consider turning back, but let's be honest, I wasn't about to spend another hour doing the sensible thing.
Without the AFMU, the ship's frameshift drive, FSD, began to exhibit minor faults partway through the return. Hardy pressed on regardless, using neutron star boosts and hoping for the best.
My FSD started complaining well before halfway,
he reported.
But it would generally turn itself back on after the cone. I figured as long as it wasn't emitting smoke or spontaneously ejecting components, I'd just keep going.
By the end of the journey, the FSD was operating at 60% integrity, while the hull displayed what one engineer described as moderate external caramelization. The ship completed the run without critical incident. Observers at Hutton Orbital were unsurprised by the report. One engineer commented,
Commander Hardy can cross half a galaxy faster than most people can finish a cuppa. But remembering to pack everything? Less reliable.
The engineer added that Hutton's engineering team is now considering adding AFMU reminder, are you sure? As an optional voice pack prompt. The Pilots' Federation confirmed that no structural damage was sustained and that the vessel has since undergone a full systems check. Commander Hardy is reportedly back in the bubble, considering future record runs, though sources close to the pilots suggest they are also shopping for a replacement coffee machine and an oven less likely to endanger ship integrity.
The Galactic Council is facing growing controversy this week after proposing the formal adoption of new standardized units for public communications of physical measurements. The initiative is aimed at simplifying hazard warnings, ship specifications, and astronomical object sizing across public broadcasts. Current guidance often results in confusing or inconsistent references. A recent report highlighted asteroid impact warnings expressed in double-decker buses, Canada geese, and 16 moderately sized elephants, depending on the system jurisdiction. The Council's impact proposal recommended the banana as the standard length unit. This has triggered a wave of debate across member systems. Disputes have already emerged over which variety of banana should be used. Proponents of the classic Cavendish argue for its widespread cultivation, while a strong lobby from agricultural worlds in the Alliance has pushed for the red Delinu banana, citing its superior structural integrity and aesthetic appeal. At present, the proposed SI unit name and symbol remain undecided. Options under consideration include the BAN, symbol BN, the Standard Banana Unit, SBU, or the Galactic Elongated Fruit Equivalent, GEFI, although this has been criticised as unwieldy. The proposal further suggests that bananas would be used only for length measurements. For mass, delegates are reportedly considering the capybara as a complementary standard. The rationale cites the animal's consistent body mass and recognisable form. Early draft documentation refers to the capybara mass equivalent, or CME, with one unit corresponding to an average adult capybara at approximately 50 kilograms. The Pilots Federation has so far taken a neutral stance, but has indicated that ship computer updates would be required should the new units be adopted. In a statement, Commander Fruta Leggett, spokesperson for the pro-banana lobby, said,
"This is about clarity. If I'm told a rock is 12 bananas long, I know exactly how far to stand back. If it's 16 imperial padmelons, I'm none the wiser."
An opposing delegate from the Imperial Measurement Standards Office suggested that such changes would
erode the dignity of technical documentation,
adding,
"No one wishes to see a cut of specification sheet measured in fruit."
Debate is expected to continue and at the next council session. In the meantime, unofficial guidance has been issued urging system broadcasters to avoid the phrase "half a banana" in public warnings, following reports of unnecessary panic in several agricultural communities.
Concerns have emerged across the galaxy over the integrity of PowerPlay system standings, following the report of unexpected shifts in figures used to track the influence of major powers. the development of the particular alarm when the Sol system, where officials now believe it may be at risk of losing a coveted AAA stronghold status. Sol remains a high profit target, not least because of its symbolic value at the heart of the Federation. The sprawling, bureaucratic, and frequently grey-clad regime now faces the unwelcome prospect of being downgraded. On Mars, this has resulted in a wave of thinly veiled panic. Multiple factions have submitted evidence claiming that they had done more than their fair share to defend the system's standing. One such report attributed Commander Jowly McLurkship, and they stated,
"We've done loads more work than that other lot. We even skipped second breakfast and had our tea in a lap in the cockpit."
Attention has now turned to the cause of the discrepancy. Some suggest that an unidentified group may have found a novel way to influence stronghold systems. Theories include the widespread deployment of placards and strategic use of highly persistent door knockers. In key stations, I've read the punctuation wrong. Others believe the decimal point may have been inadvertently washed off during routine data laundering, with the missing digit now possibly lodged somewhere in a grot trap of a server room. The Pilots Federation has confirmed that it is aware of the reports. In a statement, officials said that there is no cause for concern.
Sol is a permit-locked system and remains perfectly safe. Arissa and her associates are definitely not using forged Pilots Federation licenses to gain access.
The statement read, one Mars-based commentator was overheard saying,
"If the system does fail, the first anyone will notice is when they finally see a colour other than grey in a government-issued uniforms. Until then, business as usual."
A new academic paper published this week in the Journal of Applied Xenoanthropology has raised provocative questions about humanity's long-assumed position as the dominant sentient species on planet surfaces throughout the galaxy. The study, led by Professor Irkan Zhou of the Tian Eisler Institute for Interdisciplinary Speculation, contends that the current perceptions of species distribution are primarily an artifact of reporting bias rather than objective fact.
The apparent dominance of Homo sapiens terrestris across terrestrial environments,
the paper states,
arises chiefly from the fact that it is members of this species who are conducting, recording, and disseminating the surveys.
The report highlights a curious statistical absence. Despite tens of thousands of Earth-like and water worlds now catalogued, there has been no confirmed discovery of alternative large-scale sentient planetary civilizations, other than the Thargoids, of course, and in ancient times, the Guardians. This, the authors argue, is statistically anomalous, given the known parameters of biological evolution and the timescales involved. More controversially, the paper posits that this absence may not be coincidental, but rather the result of a deliberate conspiracy of silence within galactic media structures.
Given the extensive reliance of major news networks on human-centric sources,
Professor So writes,
there exists a systemic disincentive to publicise evidence of non-human planetary civilizations, which might, by their very presence, undermine anthropocentric assumptions and precipitate inconvenient political and engineering demands.
The paper references persistent but unconfirmed reports of sentient cucumberoid beings originating from the world designated Allotment 5, a humid Class 3 agricultural planet. According to archival data from independent survey logs, inhabitants of Allotment 5 exhibit advanced linguistic structures based on rhythmic undulation, complex communal irrigation rituals, and a morphological profile which presents significant challenges for existing human ship interior designs. Early leaked design studies suggest that full accommodation of high water content, vertically elongate, non-segmented sapient forms would necessitate radical revisions to galley structures, corridor dimensions, and atmospheric humidity controls. Critics of the paper have dismissed such claims as unsubstantiated horticultural paranoia. However, proponents argue that the absence of publicly available data on sentient cucumberoids, alongside the conspicuous lack of reported sapient species across known habitable worlds, warrants further investigation. An editorial response from the Pilots Federation's Science Directorate stated,
"We continue to monitor all credible reports of sentient life. At this time, no verifiable evidence exists to support the hypothesis of an organized cucumberoid civilization. Pilots encountering unusually ambulant produce are advised to refrain from attempting diplomatic engagement until proper protocols can be established."
Professor So remains unswayed by criticism. In an accompanying interview, he stated,
"Until independent, multi-species verification protocols are fully implemented across all survey operations, the absence of recorded non-human planetary civilizations should not be construed as evidence of absence. Such assumptions risk the propagation of an anthropocentric reporting bias, the consequences of which may become increasingly untenable should species of elevated aquatic or botanical composition attain recognized sentience. And besides, I think it would be splendid to be able to have a conversation with a giant ambulatory gherkin."
One of his colleagues at the Institute commented,
"Oh, is he off on one of his cucumber rants again? What about the fish people? Those strange moving talking rocks we found?"
The debate is expected to continue at the forthcoming Galactic Life Sciences Forum, where a dedicated panel will address undisclosed sentience and structural bias in survey reporting.
Welcome to the Hutton BGS bit, where we turn the volume up to 11 in the Hutton Situation Room before testing the brown noise generator. Well, the never-ending expansion across the Hutton systems continues without end, it would seem. Booms are in rigor. Barnard Star, Wolf 359, 36 off Yuchi, and Alpha Centauri, Bidmir, and Wolf 562. In LHS2447, we are having a bit of an outbreak. But what does it all mean? I mean, I say all. There isn't much at all this week. Well, if you want to truck it, truck medical supplies into LHS2447. If you want to mush and run, then run missions in Alpha Centauri. Our influence is a little bit low there, so it would be nice to get a wee boost. And always check mission destinations before accepting. Well, unless you want to take a trip out to Hutton, that is. And if you want to shoot it, then you can always take a trip across to Minas Tirith and shoot at these star pilots. Just for fun, of course, remember to fit non-lethal lasers and dummy autocannon shells. And that's it for this week's Hutton BGS bit.
Well, that went well.
And yes, indeed, that was the sound of a well-earned can being opened after the many, many words. There. Which one of you was it?
That was me!
I think it's doing a really good job this week.
No, it's Pepsi Max. You wouldn't want it.
Has that got one of those E numbers in it we mentioned earlier?
Maybe. I don't know. It's brown and fizzy.
Yeah. Anyway, Amelia, you were saying, sorry.
So it's Cubicle 3.
Yeah.
I said, I feel as though we're doing a really good job this week. That went well.
Seamless.
It did,
didn't
it?
Yeah.
Seamless. Did it actually not fall over something?
So, yes, I mean, as usual, all of the articles are very much based in fact. Just a quick review. This first one, obviously, you know, people trying to prevent David Brubin having to buy the whole galaxy. I'd imagine his bank manager supporting, you know, not having to fork out quite that much cash in one go.
Yes, I thought, though, is he buying the Bank of Zeons?
Well, no, he isn't. That's the point. He doesn't need to, because by buying back a chunk of the galaxy, his ownership of the galaxy percentage-wise increases, and it goes over a threshold that means that he's obliged to, unless everybody says no.
I
looked it up during the other articles. So it's pending a shareholder approval on June 27th.
Yep.
The proposed buyback represents approximately 10% of the company's market cap and follows a year of stronger than expected trading results.
Very strong. Very, very strong. Yes.
That is good then. Like you said, this is good news.
We do accept this as good news, and in fact, even the forums haven't managed to paint this one as bad news. But this comes sort of hot on the tail of a market update.
The best they could do was make it look warm. They couldn't make it terrible, but they tried.
Yeah, like if a company needs investment, that's going to be interpreted as bad. So this is the literal opposite. It's the undoing of that.
Yes. Mm. They're saying that the galaxy that we inhabit, this Milky Way version that we all inhabit here at Hutton Orbital and beyond through the bubble and out to Sagittarius A star and Beagle Point, apparently generated about 75% more revenue in the last 12 months, which is one of the reasons for the optimism. And also the Planet Coaster, that planet where they build all the roller coasters to make everybody sick. I can't remember where they park that planet. But anyway, that one's reporting something like a 200% increase in revenue for them.
Yeah, all their sim stuff. I don't know how F1 Manager's doing, but definitely the zoo and the coaster is very...
Well, the dinosaurs, they're living another version of the dinosaurs.
Yeah, with very tall brontosauruses eating fruit from very tall trees, but not the pineapples. Yep.
And there's apparently also a significant boost from the sale of publishing rights for Stranded Alien Dawn.
Yes.
That seems almost like a one-off on the side.
Yeah, and obviously they ditched this sort of idea that they were a publisher, not a computer game designer, when they got rid of the foundry, and then they sort of sold off the other non-core assets. It looks to be a fantastic turnaround for the Pilots Federation, and revenues are up massively. Massively, massively. So they're doing really well, and that's good for us, because that means we get more galaxy to play in, and obviously, as usual, Elite Dangerous is mentioned a lot. So yes, in general, the share buyback is an awesome thing. Well done them, because we were a bit worried a couple of years ago, but we're not worried now, I think, is the short version.
Well, even if the shareholders want to continue to be shareholders, it's still a very strong position. it doesn't take away from that.
Yes, strong balance sheet, strong revenue, strong results, generally strong. Yes, right. So that was we didn't have a live stream, but there was some news, but they're not going to talk about that on the live stream because it's all account. I mean, imagine the accountants and the lawyers are making some good money out of it as well. Well done them. So anything else sort of news with it? Have we had any updates or anything this week, or was there an extended Thursday patch of some sort? Was there this week or not?
Well, not that I know of.
No, it was just the kerfuffle over Sol, and I was thinking during that article, isn't that exactly what the previous patch was intended to induce?
What, a bit of instability?
The changes in question. So there's now a minus 35% on merits on reinforcement, and there's a plus 5% on undermining. So that sounds literally intended to cause like a dynamic situation, like a back and forth.
Yes, but what's happening is there's lots and lots of groups going into Sol defending it, as they are. We can guarantee that it's not the EDF, because they can never be bothered to defend Earth, but it's everybody else. And they've added up all their numbers, and they've done everything, and they've skipped tea, and they've been playing all night and whatever. And then every single time they do that, the opposing power puts in a little bit more than they do. And they're like, well, either there are millions of them, or there's something screwy going on with the numbers. Obviously, the first...
Apparently Frontier agrees, although just speculating, you've got Jerome Archer's group, who are the only ones who can reinforce it, and you've got everyone else in the middle, in this point in the middle of the galaxy where multiple superpowers worth of power play powers kind of intersect. So I would have thought there are quite a lot of powers who can undermine it.
Yes, I mean, it's a bit like being English during various sporting competitions where, you know, Scotland supports anyone but England and Wales supports anyone but England. And you get the idea, anyone supporting anyone but England. So, yes, it's a bit like that if you're Jerome Archer. Is everybody supporting anyone but an archer is kicking his arcs all over the place. And then we also had an arc stretcher. Have to say that very carefully, Amelia.
This whole story had me chuckling the whole time.
Yes. Well, mainly because, you know, we would have said Ark's Land, but that doesn't really work for the ridiculous childish puns that I put in there. But yes, so Poundland has been sold for £1 in the other universe, or Ark Stretcher for one arcs in our one here, which is just, I don't know, there's something vaguely fitting about Ark Stretcher being sold for one arcs. Anyway, and they're shutting loads of their stores, that kind of thing, mainly because I imagine everybody's realised that buying just about everything for £1, there's only so many £1 things you can have before you realise that the e-numbers have sent you mad.
One of the £1 things you can have is the entire £1 Poundland chain. So
yes, could you buy £1?
Which store it was sold in?
Possibly. All of them. Just spend a bit of a pound in each of them.
Oh, you can't spend a bit of a pound. It's always a pound.
Oh, you can't.
A pound, so, or it wouldn't be Poundland.
Oh, right. One arcs in this case, yeah. And obviously, Commander Hardy did make a bit of a faux pas, but he did make it back safely. Nobody has tried the brownies yet. They're probably radioactive. The standard banana unit, well, we've known about that one for ages and ages. and then the Journal of Applied Xenoanthropology. It arose from a conversation I was having. I overheard this conversation in a bar about, you know, where are all the other species? You know, humans everywhere, but that's it. So obviously this journal is trying to address the fact that maybe it's because we're ignoring them as opposed to maybe they don't exist. So Amelia, I mean, have you met other sentient species out there, or are they mostly just human devouring plants and things?
Mostly, yeah, the latter.
I mean, given there are three sentient species that have been found already, one would therefore assume that we're not unique in the galaxy, Guardians and Thargoids and whatever, and therefore you would expect to find something else. No? Okay.
You would have thought so, but yeah. Apparently not.
Well, cucumboids.
Apparently three is the magic number.
What is that? They actually made an equation for it, didn't they?
Yes.
The Drake equation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you sort of plumb Drake in equations, that we've got three,
then sadly, I think... Sadly, the Drake equation can best be summarised by what you get if you multiply lots of unknown variables together.
Yeah, yes, and the answer is unknown.
We don't know.
The answer is brain trees.
Brain trees. And maybe that's all that's left of a sentient species. They just put down roots and just hung their brains out on the end of things. Okay, well, I think we did it last week, and it got liked. Flossie, are you there? Uh-oh.
Flossie is burbing. Flossie's burbed seconds before you said that.
Oh, dear. Okay, well, should we... was there anything else? Oh, we wanted to do this bit. Should we do the space news and come back for Taurus?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, so let's just... somebody can ping Flossie a note to say, we haven't forgotten you. We just moved you. Right, so I better push space news button. Have we got space news this week?
Oh, we got a little bit.
Take it away.
The sun's bottom has been filmed.
Titter.
Are we back to operator tit rings?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you can see some tit rings on there. If you look at the picture, it's got a nice picture of the bottom of the sun, and apparently we've looked at the South Pole of the sun for the first time ever and went, oh. So there you go. I don't know if there's much more than that. Yes.
I didn't know that there were little green and red lines on it, though. That's news.
You normally can't see them because it's too bright.
Ah, that explains it.
Yeah, you see. Yeah, so aye, that's it. Apparently the sun's our nearest star, who knew? Yeah, you are. From Earth, the sun is so bright that it appears like a featureless disk. That's why you can't see those lines. At different frequencies and using special filters, scientists can see its true form, a dynamic fluid ball. So it's all about the magnetic fields twisting and turning on the surface and conjuring up flames and loops and all that kind of thing, which, you know, I think we've all seen before. Most of us have flown through them at some point.
Scroll down a bit, there's a man on the sun.
I see him! Oh! If you scroll even further down, there's a thing.
Thing.
Yeah.
If you scroll back up to the man on the sun.
Yeah.
I'd ask, how is he casting a shadow on the surface of the sun?
Yeah, that's not an easy thing to do, is it?
Those studio lights must be powerful.
Yeah. I don't know how he's got it.
There might be a projector screen with the image of the sun on.
No, it's the real sun. No, look at it.
What do you know? There's an even more powerful sun that's doing it then.
Yeah, that'd be it. Yeah. Thumbs up the brightness and
Beetlejuice.
Maybe Beetlejuice has finally gone supernova. Who knew? Anyway. That's it. We've seen the sun's bum. That's all it needs. That's all it needs to meet the criteria for me. So Strawberry Moons, two articles here, one in Wales and one in Yorkshire. Now I'm looking at these pictures. That looks far too big.
That one in Cumbria too.
Mm. Was it that size, Flossie?
No, but it was very...
Was this something that Amelia missed again?
Yeah.
Definitely. I miss all the things.
It was yesterday, Amelia.
Yeah, Strawberry Moose
Forever.
Well,
then, I definitely missed it.
One of them, Strawberry Moose Forever.
There you go, it's Strawberry Moose. There we go. On cue.
Strawberry Moose Forever.
Get its wee antlers tangled in the castle gates.
Oh, that one's got werewolves in it. That picture there has definitely got werewolves in it.
Yeah. Mm. It looks good, though. I mean, it looks great, but that moon in both of these pictures looks far too big. I don't know what they've done, but it looks like it's been altered.
So apparently it's a phenomenon that's not been seen so clearly for nearly 20 years. And the next one's not going to happen until 2043.
Okay.
So we might still be broadcasting then, you never know. Oh my God, yes, possibly.
Amelia, you need to start putting that into your 20-year diary.
Amelia?
Yes?
Put it in your 20-year diary now so you won't miss the next one.
You know, it's even if it goes to the diary, it's still going to be missed.
Well, okay. Well, there will
be cloudy.
There'll be clouds. There always is. Every time I go outside to try and catch one of these phenomena, I think it's a hoax because there's never anything out there.
Yes.
It's only for other people. That's why.
Oh, God.
Right. What's your next one then? Because it hasn't got a heading.
It has got a head. No, that's the second picture of the Strawberry Moons Forever.
Oh, right.
Okay. There was two, that second one's a Yorkshire one. But now we're on to the Aurora Orbital Space Plane. Let's get its first customer. Somebody's actually bought one.
The Aurora Suborbital Space Plane.
Yes.
Yes, I was thinking, hey, wow, a plane that goes into space, capable of carrying an entire 5 kilograms.
Yes, 5 kilograms. And you see it goes out of space, suborbital. 100 kilometres.
So it's just a plane then?
No, it's a model plane.
It's not even a plane, it's a model plane, okay.
Yeah.
I did the photograph though. I've been trying to work this one out. I'm sure I've seen this photo. Well, I swear I've seen this photograph before with a fighter jet on it, and I'm trying to remember. It looks like it should be an F-16 or something, and I want to see if I can reverse Google search it.
Okay. Well, Yeah, so, I mean, the way this thing works is it takes off from a runway like a normal plane, goes up to the heady heights of 100 kilometres, drops off whatever it has to drop off, and then comes back and lands on the runway. So, yeah, it's quite, you know, it's quite a good thing. But it is a rocket plane. I think for the test version, they had it with the jet engines on it, and then they switched over to rockets. And it's still working. It's all sounding very good. And, yeah, so somebody has bought one. I'm just trying to see who it was that bought it. Somebody in Oklahoma.
Yeah, I'm just glancing. Doesn't say who bought it. Somebody bought it.
Yeah.
So they're allowed to do 100 of these launches a year at 5 kilos each, or about a fraction of what one of the giant penis rockets will be taking up. Yep. Okay.
Well, that's the thing, is it'll be cheap to run. You know, that's the theory anyway, is that it'll be fairly cheap to run because it's not a rocket, it's a plane.
Yeah, and there it is to scale in somebody's hands.
I was going to say, that probably is a kilogram's worth of aeroplane there.
That's the actual one.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look like he's lifting much more than 5 kilos there.
That's going to be
late. And the great thing is, with it being suborbital, you get your payload back as well.
Yes, yeah, your payload comes back.
Plummeting.
Yeah.
I don't, you can send I don't up the know. Same satellite each time. Brilliant.
That's the thing. What are they going to put up? Suborbitally,
you know, maybe they'll put up little. No, in seriousness, maybe if you've got small satellites, very small satellites, you could send them up. Like people send up the weather balloons with Raspberry Pis attached to them.
Oh, can you imagine
Raspberry Pis floating in front of strawberry moons? Okay.
Can you imagine if the cargo bay doors opened and it had a satellite on a big catapult?
I'm wondering whether they would send up
big catapult.
Small,
yes,
very small rockets.
And yeah,
you then continue the rest of the way.
If you've got a 5 kilo payload, and once you allow for how much speed you need to get from there to actual orbital velocity, you'd be looking at grams of final payload into orbit.
Yeah, that's the thing. Nobody said what it's actually useful for yet. You know.
Yeah, or one apology officer.
I very dare you.
Only if she packed heavy.
Yes.
Yeah.
To the extra pair of shorts, just in case you need somewhere hot.
Extra pair of shorts, I put my big jacket on, put my big coat on for going to space.
Okay. So is that it with our space news for this week?
Yeah, why not? Yep.
Well, thank you very much for tracking all that down, and let's play the outro theme tune. There we go. When you don't know where to get more space news, 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 space news. Now, Flossie, are you feeling suitably shuffled?
Yeah.
Because after last week's success, we did try introing this earlier, but I hadn't spotted your burbing, and you had burbed, so we shuffled you. But anyway, now that you've unburbed yourself, we're investigating another one of the star signs, the big horny thing. But let me play your theme tune. Here we go. And here's your picture of you talking to Alan the Space Aardvark. There's your music. Take it away.
Taurus, April 20th to May the 20th. You're going on a long journey. In the course of a spring clean, you'll discover that your ship's cargo hull smells faintly of conger ale and regret. This will convince you that this is a good week to experiment, perhaps with Onion Head, or maybe just turning off Flight Assist mid-docking. Either way, expect paperwork.
Ooh, expect paperwork. Expensive paperwork. Either way, I would imagine. But there you go. If you're a Tauran, April 20th to May the 20th, that's what's your horoscope is for this week. Handing over
Do
to Amelia.
Do we have a word of the week?
Do we? I think we lost the apology officer. The apology officer swallowed the microphone again.
It's not my Tom.
No, oh, whose turn is it?
Nah.
Is it Gray's turn?
Gray.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Where did the week?
Oh my god,
have we got one?
Oh my god.
Seems. Phenomena.
I see no seams.
No seams.
Ahoy.
Maybe we need to put a bun, maybe.
Do we have a word of the week?
We do.
Oh,
and I'm paying attention this time. The word is a bunghole.
I've done the phonetics there for you. I hope that helps.
Oh, God. I dread to ask this next question.
It's to fill
what does
the
that
seams.
Mean?
You wait until you get given the sentence. A hole in a barrel or a cask you can pour the liquid through.
That's totally not
that
what I
out.
Thought it was.
No.
Can you use it in a sentence, please?
You just watch me. Cecil couldn't get the cork back in the bunghole, so he had to drink the whole cask of mega gin. Or you'll need TP for your bunghole.
That was a classic Beavis and Butthead.
I believe that's a Mr. Yes. Cornholio quote.
Yes. You need TP for your bunghole.
I was just concerned that couldn't get the cork back in, so he had to spend the rest of the night in cubicle 3. But
maybe he
managed to get through that without saying tap or spigot.
Yes, but I think you can attach.
That's because we can't spell spigot.
I think you can attach a tap or spigot to a bunghole. Bung in it.
And just for the record, headline. You all know where to look by now.
away.
Don't look, he's trying to fill his bunghole with a cork.
Right, okay, right. I suppose we ought to let's be sensible for a bit. We'll do a sensible thing on the show, like some space facts. Are you ready there, Valkarius?
Yep.
It could be this one. Hang on a second. No, it's this one.
Nope. There we go. Welcome to Space Facts, in which we're not talking about rolling dice, filming footage, asking questions, or using intravenous recreational drugs, but we are talking about shooting of the savage space battle variety. It's everything to do with space-based weaponry, how to use it, and what really happens out there when opposing forces have a bit of a disagreement. Fact number one. Kinetic weapons involving simple mass shots propelled at a target are a really bad idea. Firstly, ignition-based ballistics are comically dangerous for the user and generate a lot of excess heat. Electromagnetic ballistics, such as coil guns and rail guns, are much more feasible. However, these still incur Newton's third law, which means the user gets yeeted in the opposite direction. Keeping such a weapon steady would require powerful ship propulsion or a counter shot fired backwards at the same time, which will need either perfect formation and being really careful with your attack vector, a hit and run approach of speeding towards the target and then using the weapon to reverse course, the superb ability to fly between two enemies and hit them both in opposing directions, or really just helping yourself fly away by taking all of your shots backwards. Orbital bombardment is super easy, though. You just drop tungsten rods from space and let gravity take over. Fact number two. Missile weapons, where a warhead has its own propulsion to reach the target rather than imparting any unwanted delta V on the ship which fired it, are a way better idea and much more effective approach all round. Missiles have minimal impact on momentum, guidance systems are a strong advantage, of course, and moreover, it can just deliver a traditional explosive payload to cause upon the target all those problems normally associated with ignition ballistics affecting the user. but bigger, hotter, and more destructively. Due to reliance on shockwaves being transmitted through atmosphere, nuclear missiles are less effective. Fact number three. Far more so than for a planetary conflict, electronic weapons and protection against them become even more important out in space. The first concern is actually containing your own EMF and not being detected at all, if possible. But once the star system gets hot, that's in the sense of a battle breaking out, you need signal jamming, signal spoofing, and really the whole ship made as a big Faraday cage to protect against the dozens of EMP devices firing from both sides. The fantastical notion of cyber warfare, such as remote hacking another ship, even if possible in theory, is kind of irrelevant. And to do that, you'd need to expose an antenna, which will leave your communication systems ripe for getting fried by an EMP or melted by high-gain jammers. Fact number four. Once a conflict gets far beyond the point of possibly hiding your ship's signature from detection, and it'd be just as well to deploy radiators for large amounts of heat dissipation, another viable attack option is everyone's favourite zero-ammo zappers, directed energy weapons. If a small fighter vessel can spare 1 megawatt or so, a laser-based beam weapon could burn through hull and electronics in a few seconds. As ship sizes scale up and hulls become thicker, the power requirement also rises and becomes 10 to 100 megawatts. Beams can be defeated by reflective coating, though, so it's critical to exploit and compound any surface damage caused by other weapons. Charged particle beam weapons also fall within this category, but as we learned from the SpaceFacts article about ion propulsion, this is basically just taking your ion thrusters and pointing the plume at the target. Damage includes structural deterioration, energy arcs between ship systems, and the best defense against that is a big magnetic field surrounding the ship. Somehow. And fact number five. Without using supercruise, if even a small ship is able to accelerate to any appreciable proportion of light speed, eventually, and if it were to do so with a collision course, the impact could crack a planet open. Or bosh a really big bunghole through it, I suppose. And that's it. Space facts. Lots of space facts. What do you know they need to know? Think for one straight to your brain.
Can I ask a quick question?
Why? You must.
Yes, I must. Why tungsten rods for the orbital bombardment?
Tungsten rods. I don't know.
Density.
Pretty dense. That's true.
Yeah.
I suppose it's any old lump of mass as long as it is aerodynamic, so like a rod.
I was kind of thinking maybe the high melting point or something like that.
Tungsten's high strength, reasonably high melting point, very high, very, very high density.
Yeah, okay.
So excellent. Other high density things lead would melt on the way down and be less effective on impact.
Yeah.
So if you've already passed the point of not doing war crimes anymore, then that's what you break out.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, like a big rock would do it, but tungsten's better because it's predictable and it's...
Well, a tungsten rod will cut straight through the atmosphere and make a very big hole when it hits the ground. A big rock will mostly burn up in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And you have to go very, very big rock to reliably hit the ground.
And it might crack and explode.
Yeah. I suppose, though, if you are past the war crimes point, then it really doesn't matter if you're taking out a building or an entire city, really. So.
Yeah. Or whether you're firing the enemy spaceship at the planet in an orbital bombardment. Right, here, have that. okay. No, that's great. Thanks.
Amelia.
Ah, okay. Next up, we have Flossie with the CG News.
Who is this superhero? Jex?
Nope.
Mia, the apology officer?
No way, man.
Helen, the mild-mannered CG publisher?
Could be. Hello, Flossie here with this week's CG News. There are two new CGs this week. Delane targets Imperial forces in Beta 3 to Carly, and Imperial campaign targets Archon Delane in Beta 3 to Carly. A new pirate initiative has begun in the Beta 3 to Carly system, focused on disrupting Imperial operations. The campaign, coordinated by Archon Delane from the Mictlan megaship deep within the system, seeks support from loyal commanders to apply military pressure on Imperial infrastructure throughout the region. A statement from Kumo Council enforcer Ralph Malek said, "This isn't the first time the Empire has tried to wipe us out. They'll leave the same way they came, bloodied, humiliated, and poorer than before." The campaign, coordinated by Imperial Intelligence and the Imperial Navy, seeks support from loyal commanders to apply military pressure on Delane's efforts throughout the region. A spokesperson for Emperor Arissa Lavinia Duval stated, "Imperial citizens have not forgotten the insult made by Archon Delane, made against Her Majesty the Emperor. The time has come to deliver a permanent message. Empire space is not pirate hunting ground." The campaign is centred around the Beta 3 Tukani system within Kumo Council territory, currently held by Emperor Arissa Larini Duval, where commanders can sign up to support either Archon's forces by redeeming combat bonds issued by Kumo Council at the Mictlan, or support Imperial forces by redeeming combat bonds issued by UB Dominion at Bakewell Platform. Pilots of either side who register at least one contribution by redeeming combat bonds will receive the following rewards, regardless of which side wins. One each 2B/3A Seeker missile racks, pre-engineered with high capacity and sturdy modifications plus FSD interrupt. Credits depending on success tier achieved and individual contribution level. Pilots in the top 75% and above, regardless of their pledge power, will receive an additional one of each of the Seeker missile racks, pre-engineered with high capacity and sturdy modifications plus FSD interrupt. If Delane emerges victorious, those who are specifically pledged to Archon will also receive 40,000 merits, Archon Delane Powerplay Banner Cockpit Customization. If Emperor Arissa Lavinia Duval emerges victorious, those who are specifically pledged to Emperor Lavinia Duval will also receive 40,000 merits and an Emperor Arissa Lavinia Duval Powerplay Banner Cockpit Customization. To be eligible for rewards, you must sign up as an active participant before redeeming combat bonds. This is a combat initiative. You may only sign up for one side at a time. You may switch sides by abandoning the gold, but note that any existing contributions will be forfeited. Commander power pledges will be taken as the pledge power at the time of initiative completion. Be aware, faction state continues and other disruptive events may impact availability of station services and influence the outcome of the operation. And some additional details of the module. The
2B3A Seeker Missile Vax with mass plus 120%, integrity plus 100%, power draw plus 30%, damage minus 5.5%, thermal load minus 10%, armor piercing plus 40%, rate of fire minus 26%, ammo clip size plus 100%, ammo maximum plus 100%. FSD interrupt is experimental included. And that's it for this week's CG News.
Blossy told you what to do.
Wow, that was a long one. That was a really big one. It's
noble names in there. Probably didn't pronounce properly.
Right, so it's them versus them. Pick one of them, and if you do well, then you get stuff. Is that the TLDR version?
Yeah, that's
right. But you can't do both.
No, you can't do both.
Pick one side or the other side. But they'll both reward you if you do support them.
Yeah.
Yes. And no idea how popular it's been so far, but I'm sure you'll give us an update. And this is running for... It is just 1 week. It's not one of these ones that's going to get extended.
Oh, it's two weeks again.
Yeah. Right, so we can get an update on how it's going next week.
Yeah, we'll go, yeah.
Do we reckon it's going to be a landslide, one or the other?
I have no idea.
All hail the Emperor?
Power play. I have no idea about power play.
No, me either. Okay, well, somebody who might... I'm going to take a guess based on previous weeks. Might have another spin on this. And might tell us who they think's going to win. With no bias, of course. Might be the Beetlejuice and Wotherspoon, possibly. Or they might be talking about other things. But we've got something from them. Did they say it was video this week or audio? I can't remember. Was it audio? Hang on, I'm just reading it.
I think it's audio.
I'm bound to hit the wrong button. Yes, it's an audio one this week, so I've got to push this button marked A. Here we go. Let's give it a go.
Galnet News Digest, 12th of June 3311. We read the news so you don't have to. In this week's news, the Empire strikes back against the Pirate King. Data terminals are taken offline in the Sol system as the Pilots Federation investigate hacking allegations. And if you want a steam-powered spaceship, you might just be in luck.
On the 2nd of August 3310, the Emperor survived an attempt on her life. Finally, more than 10 months later, the Empire has struck back against the perpetrators, Pirate King Archon Delane and his Kumo crew. There's conflict raging in Beta 3 Tucani, with special rewards on offer to those who take part. The Kumo crew committed two atrocities in August last year. They detonated a bomb outside Republican Party offices on Nanaman 1, and they ambushed Emperor Orisa as she was leaving a harvest festival in Princess Ashling's Cubio system. At the time, Senator Denton Petraeus vowed revenge for the attack, but it seems that it's been left for the Emperor to belatedly take the battle to the Kumo crew flagship, the Mictlan, in Beta 3 Tucani. Note that this is the Beta-3 Tucani with an I at the end of its name, not the very similarly named Beta-3 Tucani with an A-E. A spokesperson for the Emperor promised firm but fair retribution for the provocations of last year. In response, the Kumo crew appear to have confirmed their involvement in the assassination attempt, saying they expected a response and are pleased the Imperial bureaucracy has finally got around to launching it. Kumo Council Enforcer Rav Malek has promised that Imperial forces will be sent home
bloodied, humiliated, and poorer than before.
The Mictlan believed to have Archon Delane on board, is orbiting one of the Kumo crew's signature lava worlds. Pirates love a good lava world. It's also close to the rather impressive A-class star, creating lots of lovely photo opportunities. Imperial forces have based themselves at Bakewell Platform, which boasts a restrained two Newpammers, unlike most recently constructed Coriolis stations, which have four. There are plenty of conflict zones in which to earn combat bonds, with an impressive selection of rewards on offer, even for those not pledged to either power. No matter which side participants choose to fight on, the rewards are the same. Everyone who signs up and turns in at least one combat bond gets a 2B and a 3A Seeker missile rack, pre-engineered with high-capacity and sturdy modifications, plus FSD interrupt. They also get a big credit reward at the end of the 2 weeks. Commanders in the top 75% and above will get an additional pair of 2B and 3A Seeker missile racks. For commanders pledged to Orisa or Delane, if their power wins, they will receive 40,000 merits and an appropriately themed power play banner bobblehead. For everyone else, you can choose either side and get the same rewards. In fact, it might be easier to get into the top 75% on the side that has fewer commanders signed up.
The Pilots Federation has temporarily turned off the power play system score and have stopped issuing merits for on-foot transfer power data activities because of some wild swings in the undermining scores for a number of systems near Sol, including the Sol system itself, which are suspected to be due to nefarious activity. As the powers all transmit telemetrics back to the Pilots Federation, such activity can be detected and dealt with. The pause in some on-foot power play activity is expected to last for at least a week, with Thursday the 19th anticipated as the earliest that things will be back to normal. Meanwhile, Colonia resident Ian Doncaster has pointed out that in the age of trailblazers, there's no longer any reason for powers to enter into conflict. The powers are gaining a total of around 70 new systems per week, while commanders are colonising more than 1,500 new systems in the same time. There are more than enough systems for the powers to keep expanding almost infinitely without ever needing to come into conflict. There are 20,000 neutral systems within reach of existing power play systems, and each one of those systems will, when acquired, bring even more neutral systems within reach. The powers have more than enough room to expand peacefully. War is over. If we want it.
In a callback to the imaginary days of the 19th century, Zorgon Peterson and Falcon De Lacy have issued steampunk-themed ship kits for the Mamba and Anaconda. Each kit comes with three themed add-ons for your ship, including what appear to be steam relief valves to vent excess boiler pressure. There are six steampunk-themed paint jobs to go with these cosmetic add-ons, which come at a very reasonable 16,800 arcs per ship. Or for only a little more, which means 25,500 arcs, you can risk buying the Pilots Federation pre-built Mamba Conflict Zone Jumpstart build, which comes with the Mamba version of the steampunk paint job and a rather unpleasant skull decal. The ship itself has a combat-oriented loadout, allegedly featuring upgraded frag cannons and shielding, plus engineered thrusters. The Frag Mamba is an interesting choice for a starter ship, and is likely to be a baptism of fire for commanders new to combat, but at least the rebuy will be totally free. How piratical.
And that's this week's Galnet News. Galnet News, we read the news so you don't have to.
He must be using shorthand, Flossie, to take all the notes while you're reading, you know.
Yeah, must be.
yeah, I mean, it's two different sides of the same dice, you know. Just one of them with more opinion and one of them with all the facts. That's yours, by the way. Right, well, thank you very much to Beetlespoon and Mother Jude. I hadn't realised they'd actually switched off all this merit stuff while they investigate the power play shenanigans. But as Flossie says, power play, well, what's that?
Yeah, it seems Sol is it is still participating. It sounds like it was just some on-foot stuff that has been switched off.
Oh, an attempt to mitigate some of it. Or some of the negative side effects. Well, I suppose it's time to get towards the end of the show. ECM news, tiny bit, we're getting ready for August the 16th. We fired up two Starship bridges last weekend with full crews and attempted some PWP, not PVP, Artemis. We haven't worked out how to make it PVP. At the moment, it's two ships cooperating on the same mission, so you can crank the difficulty level up a bit and act like a fleet, which was incredibly good fun. We tested the fighters feature, which is one that we've not had on Artemis previously. Where the comms officer, when they get bored in combat, actually hops into a fighter and launches it out of the ship and can fly around joining in pew-pewing things. It's basically like an SLF. So it's made of glass and blows up quickly, but it carries a few guns. But that was really good fun for making them a seven-player setup on each side instead of a six-player one. And, we did it with six, but you know what I mean. You could do seven. But tested all that and got some more boxes for it. So that's exciting stuff that's going on for ECM. We've been reminded by King Hanky that obviously he's bringing all the chess sets again and trying to challenge anybody to beat him at chess. Please, somebody beat the Hanky at chess. And, so the team, I think we've all got a big sort of get-together this weekend to chat about all the bits and bobs that are going in to the event as well, and a site visit.
The first meeting to plan the meeting of the meeting.
Yeah, we got a pre-meeting meeting, and then a site visit, then a post-site visit, post-meeting meeting.
Yeah,
if you see what I mean.
Sounds very corporate, doesn't it?
Yes. Basically, it'll be 90% chatting and 10% right. Have we got everything? You know. That's what's happening with the ECM side of things. But all going great guns, looking forward to it. We did have confirmation the Pilots Federation will be attending.
Hey.
Yay.
We reported previously, but they are definitely attending. Three of they at the moment, and they're the right ones. These are the ones at the pointy end of the galaxy. You know, the kind that wear lab coats.
By the right ones.
You know, the ones at the pointy end who wrangle servers and make technology happen and all that end of things. The doing bit of it. I mean, we love the CM team, but there's, you know, sitting down with the devs. Now, that's cool.
The engineers? Oh, yeah.
Well, yes, engineers, scientists.
The boffins.
We know who it's going to be because he's always there, isn't he? He's part of the scenery after this many years. Mm-hmm. It's a question of who he's bringing with him. Is he extracting anybody from the corner? Possibly. Anyway, right. End of the show. Anybody got anything else before we move along? We're going to hit the magic button and then Valkarius and I are going to have a pre-meeting about something to do with ECM. And we'll be catching up with you next week. Next week's nowhere near the end of the month, so there's no Frontier broadcast coming up, but there are probably going to be lots of shenanigans from Flossie and yet more news. Other than that, I suppose it remains for us to say we're going to go raid somebody. So does anybody see over on the Twitch somebody that's in dire need of a bunch of Hutton truckers popping in and yelling for the mug at them while they fly their spaceship?
So, you know what? You ask me this every week.
Yes.
I'm still not ready for it.
You get used to it sooner or later, yeah.
No, I won't. No.
No.
You expect too much.
So what have we got out there in Raid Land?
And there's Cal L of Awesome with five viewers, who seems to be fitting out an SRV.
Cal something what? Oh, Cal L of Awesome. Son of Jor-El of Awesome. Yeah, I think we'll pop in on Kal-El, shall we? So we're going to go and raid Kal-El. So usual rules apply. Turn up, give a hearty for the mug to Kal-El. If you love what they're doing, you know, give them a follow as well. And join in with the banter and represent Hutton in a proper fashion, just by yelling mug a lot. Other than that, read the credits. There's an important recipe in there from Amelia. And Amelia, what else do we say at the end of the show?
For the mug!
For the mug!
For the mug!
For the mug.
Never really mattered at all. We're gonna take the cargo where it's needed today. Super cruising all across the Milky Way. We'll take anything, anytime, anywhere. Loading up the T-Nas to the brim with grass. For the mug, for the mug. Yeah, you know just where we're coming from. For the mug, for the mug. Now everybody sing the Hutton Trucker song. Crash into the sun. Swivel acts the pilot on the Xbox One. Alvin at the front, you know he leads us well. Trucking across the galaxy, now everybody yell. For the mug, for the mug. Yeah, you know just where we're coming from. For the mug, for the mug. Now everybody sing the Hutton Trucker song.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's the end of the show. Everyone's buggered off now, so why don't you bugger off too?